This podcast is not intended as a substitute for professional help. If you or someone you know is facing difficulties, I advise you consult a psychologist. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Psych for Life with Dr. Amanda Ferguson. I'm your host, Dr. Amanda Ferguson. Today's episode is about helping children be who they want to be with psychologist Sabina Reed. Sabina, you're a human behavior expert psychologist. You're a speaker, media commentator, and life Sherpa, working with organizations, groups, and individuals on topics including change, well-being, stress, relationships, mental health, and leadership. And you help people become the architects of their own growth and freedom so they can ultimately, as you say, human better. You're the resident psychologist on Melbourne's top rating radio 3AW in the afternoons, co-host of the Human Cogs podcast, brand ambassador with Seek, and board member of the Reach Foundation. Oh my goodness, I'm tired just thinking about all of that. Welcome, Sabina.
Thank you, Amanda. That's a mouthful, isn't it?
You are doing so much. What on earth led you into all of this and keeps you so driven?
That's a good question. Well, I typically explain that when I was 17, I was the end of year 12, and my mother reminds me that I said to her, I think I want to be a psychologist, but I don't want to listen to people's problems all day. That's what 17-year-old me said. It sounds counterintuitive, I know, because people associate psychology with someone that has a couch and a clock and a box of tissues, typically. And I think maybe my 17-year-old self thought that's what a psychologist did. And I couldn't quite imagine sitting on a couch with the tissues and the clock and listening and working with and walking alongside people, thinking about what they brought through a lens of deficit, through a lens of what wasn't working. Mm. This is in the 80s when there was no positive psychology. Martin Seligman hadn't put his stamp on that domain at this point. Yeah. And psychology, as you know, was really aligned to what was broken, what needed fixing. And it was very in line also with what I would call the medical model, looking at something's not working, how will we treat it and fix it, which is not how I see humans. I didn't see them like that in the 80s. I don't see them like that now. Now I'm 52. So 17-year-old me, 52-year-old me probably knew some of the same things, but I didn't know in what capacity or what channels I could explore that. And now from the bio that you've shared, you can see I think I got there.
Oh, you got everywhere.
I got everywhere.
You are everywhere. And just as we were chatting off air, that you're reducing now and you're not taking any private patients. So that's important for listeners to know that they can certainly book you for corporate speaking and for all kinds of other organizational events and media, I'm sure, and listen to your wonderful podcast. Oh my goodness, the guests on that podcast are amazing, fascinating.
They are fabulous conversations and some extraordinary, well, we call them extraordinary ordinaries because they have extraordinary stories to tell and some of them have very high profiles. But, you know, it's my belief that, and this is, I'm sure we'll talk about this, but that we have more in common than we do different. And even if we have a high profile, we're still experiencing the same emotions, the same needs, the same foibles and flaws and yearnings and questions, regardless of who we are.
That's right. We all grapple with the elements of the human condition because we're all sharing that human.
Yes.
And you talk about human better. What do you mean by that?
Well, again, it's probably in line with my own personal philosophy that I don't think there's one place of arrival. And so when I thought a lot about my own belief system, and I guess from a branding perspective, if I had to sound a little bit vacuous, I've thought long and hard over the years, what is it that I do? Because I work in all of these different spaces, as you said, the media and corporates and in the past more clinical. And the common threads that pull it together for me is thinking that, or believing that, we all want to carve out a life that is full of meaning and purpose and connection. And for me, that's what human better means. So that was sort of an all-encompassing phrase that I thought hopefully explained. It's loose enough but meaningful enough to explain what it is that I see my purpose and my own work as moving towards and as encapsulating.
And it is such an important purpose by comparison to something else I read about you wanting to be the blonde one in ABBA.
Well, yeah, I've got a few silly things in my bio. You didn't read all of it, of course. But that's really speaking to the sense of play that I think is, well, it's very big in my own life, but I think it's something we all need more of. And as we become adults, even though many of us are questioning, are we adulting? Because who knows what that means? But I think, you know, when you look at, and we're talking about young people in part today too, Amanda, when you look at who we were as a little person, what were we doing naturally? What lit us up? What brought us joy? What did we do? Not because someone was giving us a reward, whether that be verbal praise or a gift or comparing us favorably to our sibling or giving us a gold medal or a blue ribbon, but because it feels innately joyful and meaningful and natural to us. And I think that's a long way, just a roundabout way to say that I think, you know, over the years, and certainly my younger self was always connected to this sense of play and joy and singing into impromptu makeshift microphones. I did it as a little child wanting to be the blonde one, as I used to call her, Anna, of course, yeah. In ABBA. But I think I still do it now. I still, in fact, I was just saying to you off air, you can kind of see my colourful nails, and I've had them painted because I'm off to Mardi Gras in Sydney this weekend, and I'm on a float. I'm dancing on a float. Oh. The name of the float is called No Borders, No Judgment. Wow. And when I heard the name of this float, it just spoke to my heart and made my soul soar. And I thought, what? I can't think of anything I'd rather do than dance on a float in Mardi Gras, honoring all people and who they are, with a wraparound of sort of love and music and a sense of connectedness, I guess. So. Jeez. I'm not being the blonde one in ABBA, I'm just being the dance gal on the float.
Wow, you are indeed. And connectedness, you've mentioned a couple of times, which is what your Reach Foundation does, of course. And you're a current board member of the Reach Foundation, which creates generations of confident, self-aware, passionate young people shaping the world to be a better place. And it's a not-for-profit organisation. I didn't realise it was founded back in 1994 to inspire young people to believe in themselves and get the most out of life, which is what we've just been talking about you're doing in organisations elsewhere as well.
Yeah, so clearly I was not anything to do with the founding of Reach, but being a board member when I was invited onto the board, I thought, yes, this speaks to me in spades. Of course, working with young people is meaningful because it takes more of a preventative approach. And I like the idea of not working down the bottom of the cliff, but, you know, back further up the top of the cliff to equip people across the lifespan, but particularly young people with skills and tools and a mindset to be able to navigate whatever comes their way. And I think our young people are doing it really tough. And so it's a credit to the Reach Foundation that we work with 40,000 young people every year. And many people who, particularly in the state of Victoria, I live in Melbourne where Reach was founded, so certainly very well known in Victoria and in Melbourne. But people perhaps don't realise that in addition to working with young people in schools and community groups, Reach also now works in the organisational space, in corporates and with adults, because a lot of the skills that we want to equip young people with are as meaningful, of course, to continually teach as lifelong learners to adults. And I first came into contact with Reach when I went on a camp called the Thousand Faces Camp. And I cannot recommend this experience highly enough. It's really what led me to my work with Reach and ultimately to being a board member. And the Thousand Faces Camp is a really unique experience where Reach pair together adults who are seen as leaders in senior fields of whatever field they work. They're not necessarily psychologists or social workers. They could be in any field. And pair them up with 20 young people, 20 adults. Wow. And when you go on the Thousand Faces Camp, I think the adults tend to think, well, I'm there as the wise elder and I'll impart some of my knowledge and I'll be able to share with these young people what I know is important in life and what's helped me cope, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, as would not surprise you, once you fall into this rich melting pot of young and old, you realize that we're all dealing and grappling with a lot of the same stories in our minds, a lot of the same questions and fragilities and vulnerabilities. And there's something very powerful about sharing that with a sense of, I guess, vulnerability and authenticity, which are words that are overused. I know that they are overused, but when they are used correctly, and in this space, I would say they are bang on. There was just some kind of magic that unfolded, and I just felt so very moved by the experience. If anyone's interested in checking it out, if you work in an organization, you could pay or sponsor one of your senior staff to go as a reward for them.
Wow. And
they go as the adult. Yeah, it's pretty life-changing, and I don't use those words lightly either.
No, and I was amazed to see that Deloitte was raving about their graduate program being impacted by the work of Reach coming in and helping the graduates with their entrance into the workforce. That's wonderful.
Yeah, so they are really, we are working not just in the school space, and I think that's, you know, we'd love people to check that out, because if you work in an organization, whether it's small or large, and you're looking for powerful content that's delivered by young people.
Yes.
And I think there's a power in that, because clearly I'm a speaker in the corporate space, but I'm not a young person. I mean, I'm young at heart, but I'm not there on the ground in the trenches as someone in my teens or 20s. And all of the facilitators at Reach are young people, and they are trained, highly skilled facilitators. And I think that was the other thing that I observed at the Thousand Faces Camp, was how skilled they were at facilitating and working with whatever was coming up for people in the room. And that's no easy feat. It takes a lot of experience, a lot of hours before you can work with that kind of level, being so nimble, being so in tune with people in the room.
Amazing. Yeah, that the young people are developing these workshops and delivering them, yeah. And that we have Reach in New South Wales and Victoria, Australia. But I know that children across the planet, adolescents in particular, loneliness is epidemic, and adolescents are really impacted by that. And I just think this topic is so important for all of us internationally, and surely there are other similar groups in other countries, and or there need to be.
Yeah, I mean, we are a national outfit, so we do work in all states in Australia. But as you say, there's a need for this across the globe. And while there are certainly cultural differences this is another topic that's close to my heart, is this idea that so much of our work these days in the clinical and corporate, well, perhaps just in many spaces, pays a lot of homage, I guess, to diversity and inclusion, which of course is so important.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder if that misses some of the universality of the human experience, because we can classify people, we can identify with different headings, titles, groupings, but at our very core, we bleed the same. We're the same.
Yep.
And even genetically, I've read research that says, from a sort of genome perspective, we share as humans 99.9% the same as each other. And I think that's forgotten when we like to give labels, as I say, well, I belong to this group, or this is my religious affiliation, or this is the way I identify through gender or sexuality. This is my working title. This is the role I play in the family unit. This is how much I earn. This is where I live. This is where I went to school, et cetera, et cetera. However, above and beyond all those things, what has come up for me time and time and time again in every setting that I work in, whether it's on talkback radio or facilitating or speaking or clinical or personal private life, is this experience that we all share of wanting to be heard and wanting to be understood and wanting to be connected. The word again that I keep using, it's probably my number one value, is connection. And when we're not feeling those things, we suffer.
Yeah.
And suffering is, of course, you know, a very normal part of the human experience. And I think the more we're able to acknowledge that suffering in ourselves, mm-hmm. and in others with compassion and validation, it lifts some of the weight that some of those experiences and feelings bring.
That's it. And that lack of connection now because of social media in part, that we're meant to be more connected than ever and we're less physically connecting because of that. And young people probably having been so hit by the pandemic and lockdowns and then more use of social medias and devices. So are you finding that that's partly why Reach can help children?
Yeah, I mean, it is. Of course, social media gets a bad rap and, boy, does it have some explaining to do. But we also know that it is a forum that young people use to connect. Mm. Sometimes through social media, people make new connections and actually find real-life tribes. And if you tell a young person, at least in an age-appropriate way, I'm not talking about a preschooler, a high schooler, to spend no time on social media, you're kind of telling them to operate in a world that is foreign to them. And so it's a dumb example, but I do remember when I was young and my parents were talking about getting, should we get a microwave or not? And, you know, my mother was saying, who knows what these microwaves do? And clearly I'm not drawing a parallel between Instagram and a microwave, but just, or we could talk about AI now, yeah, for instance. You know, in our career trajectory, someone my age will be thinking, well, what does that mean? And is that going to be a threat to our careers security, our job security as we know it? Or is another way to look at it, well, it's here. It's already here. So how do we learn to embrace it? How do we learn to use it wisely? And how do we upskill and teach people so that they can drive these sort of machines and these technologies in ways that are useful, not harmful? Mm. You know, we don't expect a young person to drive a car without a license. Yeah. We spend in Victoria, it's countless hours. My kids are both adults now, but I reckon it was 240 hours or something that we had to do driving alongside them.
Yeah.
And only then, once they've had all those hours and all that tuition and all of that time, actually in an experiential setting, do we say you are now equipped and safe to drive a car. And even when we say that, we recognize that they're in the very early stages mm-hmm. of driving, and it's a novel and new experience that will require high levels of mindfulness to maintain safe driving practices. And yet we hand a smartphone over to our child when they're two because yeah. we are frustrated with their screaming and their tantrums. And look, we've all had kids having tanties, and we've all had times where we've handed a screen or something to a child because we need that reprieve, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think we need to think about how we're equipping young people to use this technology for good, not evil.
Yes, and to still physically connect. And, yeah, you're right, often those online connections are the beginning of a physical connection and tribe to find, which is great.
Mm, and important in school years. I mean, we'd be kidding ourselves if we said otherwise.
Absolutely. It's more about being in charge of our devices, I think, and modelling that behaviour for kids is so important.
Yeah. Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah. I was amazed to read that there are currently over 4 million young people living in Australia, and Reach works with over 40,000 of them, which I think you said, but 250 of them are working for you in workshops in schools and in the community, and personal development workshops that the kids, the young people rather, create. That's a huge number of people, 250 odd of these workers.
Mm. And these are young people, as I said, that are working across the country with school-aged children, but also with adults. And, you know, I think we need to honour the young person's voice in this conversation. It'd be like you and I having a conversation about, you know, Indigenous people and not having an Indigenous person on the panel.
Yeah.
We can speak through our own perceptions and our own ideas and perhaps our own research, but we don't have that lived experience of what it's like to walk in those shoes. And I kind of see this as akin to that young people are living it.
Yes.
And we may speak as parents or professionals, but this is the world that they are inhabiting now. So why not give them a voice at the table and a microphone, in the case of Reach's work, in settings with adults and young people alike?
Absolutely. They've inherited a world very different to the one we grew up in, and being able to inform adults of what their experiences are. And you know, climate anxiety, just as one aspect, you know, rethinking and being much more conscious about whether to have children for the first time in human history in a way that it's never been experienced before, and definitely being able to connect with other young people who are going through the same thing. There's no way we adults can really completely empathize and understand what it must be like.
No, and of course there's so much conversation about the impact of the pandemic, and a lot of people want to sort of put that sweep that under the rug now, like we're done with that, let's move on from that, how long are we going to talk about that, hasn't the world sort of returned to some kind of normal? Well, of course it's spinning on its axis in a way that at least it wasn't a few couple of years ago, but it still has a residual effect. And I think we need to recognize that that residual effect looks different for different cohorts. And if you were at university during the pandemic, you've missed out on freedom and opportunity and independence. And so, and if you're in high school, if you're in year seven starting high school, if you're in year 12 finishing high school, as I said, if you're at the beginning of university, some of those key milestones have really been impacted. And I would almost use the term kind of stunted development. And I think we're only now seeing the flow-on effects from that, that this stunted development, how it may have impacted a lot of our young people.
Exactly. I mean, the lack of rites of passage and those retreats you're talking about must give that sense of rite of passage in a different way, of course, but those who've missed out on those through graduation ceremonies and so forth would benefit from those kinds of rituals, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's unfair to our young people or to society at large to say that's sort of behind us now. And it's not that I want to stew in the negativity or the you know, the challenges that were so great, but just to recognise that the flow-on effects are still very much present. And yet, having said all of this, Amanda, I mean, I think one of the things I'm also passionate about is to, and it's what my 17-year-old self was passionate about, is to recognize the innate sense of coping and capacity and possibility and resilience. Actually, resilience is not a word I use often because I think that's another one that's bandied around way too often. But the potential that lies in each of us is so strong. I believe that at our very core as a species. And what we need to do is wrap our young people and people of all ages in some kind of environment that allows those, that possibility and that capacity to come to the fore, because that is within us, but it gets shut down, or we lose a sense of confidence, or our negative self-talk takes over, or we think perhaps I'm the only one. That's something I hear people say all the time. As I said, in all of the fields of work that I work in, people will often lean in and say, you've probably never heard this before, whether it's on a clinical couch, whether it's talkback radio, whether it's in a boardroom with an ELT group of senior leaders. And yet inevitably I have, yes. And you will have heard it too. And that's the gift of the work that you and I do as psychologists, is we have the privilege of hearing people's stories. Mm. And having heard so many hundreds or thousands of stories, I know that no one is alone in those stories. And I guess that's part of what human better to me means, is to share those stories and to share those vulnerabilities. And when we do, we kind of breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not the only one, and maybe others have walked through this experience too, and maybe suffering, it sounds very Buddhist, but maybe suffering is okay and normal and expected. And that's what I believe. I know it for sure.
Yeah, it is universal. And as you say, we're more similar than we are different. We know research shows that. And if people want to book you for help with their organisations in this capacity, and I'm sure in leadership, as you say, and lots of the other areas that we mentioned, that will be on the show notes so people can have a look for more about Sabina on the show notes. They can go to your website for speaking, media, interview opportunities, not for private practice, but to find Sabina, go to www.sabinareedpsychology.com.au. And to learn more about REACH or to book a workshop for your school or community, to become a supporter or donate, you can go to www.reach.org.au.
Wow. Well, do you get a set of steak knives with all of that too, Amanda? But while we're giving steak knives and eyebrows out, I will also, if it's okay, give my own podcast a little plug, because if you're listening to Amanda and I talk, then you're obviously a pod fan. And again, you have mentioned Human Cogs, but it is a passion project of mine that I do with my co-host Mads Grummet, and just some beautiful, rich, insightful stories from people doing human well.
They sure are wonderful, those podcast episodes. I really encourage people to seek them out.
Thank you. Thank you for your support. And likewise to you, you're obviously speaking to some wonderful guests. I've seen and listened to some of your work, and, you know, we need this. We need this kind of content to know we're not alone, and to continue to carve out the lives that we're all carving out.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sabina, for adding to the podcast in such a wonderful way today.
Yeah, good to see you, Amanda. Thanks again.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Plus, don't forget, you can access all of the resources mentioned in today's podcast via the show notes. Is there a pressing issue or topic you'd like me to discuss? Head to my Instagram at @dramandaferguson and send me a DM. I love hearing from my listeners. If anything discussed in this podcast has caused you concern or distress, contact your general practitioner or health provider. To locate a psychologist in your area, call the Australian Psychological Society and locate Find a Psychologist service on 1800 333 497, or visit www.findapsychologist.org.au. If you or someone you know is in crisis, Lifeline is available 24/7 on 13 11 14, and Kids Helpline, again 24/7 on 1800 55 1800, and both are free of charge. To find out more about me, please visit my website, dramandaferguson.com.au. You can find the link in my show notes. The opinions expressed by guests in these podcasts aren't necessarily shared by me.